In the silence, Margolis took a sip of his coffee. Which is part of the reason I wanted to meet with you. If someone else slashed your tires, who could it be? When I posed that question to Dr. Manning, he told me to look into Mark Atkinson.
Why?
Because Atkinson might be trying to frame Lester.
That doesn't make any sense.
Maybe. Unless Atkinson knew Lester and had a possible reason. And it just so happens that it might be the case. Lester was the one who introduced Cassie to Atkinson in the first place. It took a few beats for Maria to absorb this.
Lester and Atkinson knew each other?
They both work for the same janitorial company, or used to, anyway. According to Dr. Manning, after Cassie died, Lester and Atkinson had a falling out. Lester confronted Atkinson about failing to protect Cassie when Law showed up, called him a coward, and they got into a fight. There's no record of it, but that doesn't mean anything. Most of the time in situations like this, the police are never called. Long story short, according to Dr. Manning, Atkinson was pissed.
And you know that for certain?
Not about the fight, but it's true that Lester and Atkinson worked together. After we talked yesterday, I spoke to Atkinson's mother again, and then a supervisor at the janitorial company. That's what I meant, by the way, when I said that I was looking into different angles. Because something about the way Atkinson just up and left town bothered me as soon as I learned about it. I can kind of accept the idea that he ran off to meet the woman of his dreams or whatever. Guys can be stupid like that. But no contact with his mom except for a couple of letters that had been printed from a computer. No calls or texts to his mom or his friends. When all this with you just happens to be going on, it didn't sit right with me.
I still don't understand why Atkinson would come after me, though. Like I told you, I've never met the man.
Is it possible that he's angry for the same reason you think Lester is? Because Laws got out of prison and killed Cassie and he blames you?
Maybe, she said slowly. But Lester's been the one following me. He sent the flowers and sent over the drink. Lester's the one who showed up at my house last night.
Exactly, Margolis agreed. And all of this has made me wonder whether Dr. Manning was wrong about the relationship between Lester and Atkinson. If he's right, and Atkinson is trying to frame Lester, then how did he get Lester to play along so perfectly? Especially when you take last night into account. If you throw that idea out, however, it leaves us with a couple of other possibilities. The first is that Lester somehow knew that Atkinson was going to go after you, and he decided to join in. Of course, that raises the question as to how Lester would know what Atkinson was planning, which opens a whole new can of worms. If we put aside that idea too, however, there's also a third possibility. Maria looked across the table at Margolis, almost afraid to hear what he was going to say next. What if, he finally offered, Lester and Atkinson are working together, and they're providing alibis for each other? Maria, trying to absorb Margolis's questions, said nothing. I know what you're thinking, Margolis said, and it sounds crazy to me too, but of the three explanations, it's the only one that seems to make any sense at all.
I'm still not sure why you think Atkinson might be involved in the first place. Maybe Lester had some homeless guy or kid slash my tires and leave the note because he knew he'd have the perfect alibi. Because everything else points to the fact that Lester's probably working alone.
Not everything, Margolis said. See, the thing is, I ran the registrations on the cars near the park, just like Colin suggested, and one of them brought up a serious red flag.
Why?
Because the car in question is registered to Mark Atkinson.
Does that make sense to you? Maria asked Colin after Margolis had left. About Lester and Atkinson working together?
I don't know, Colin admitted.
She shook her head. It's Lester, alone, it has to be. Even to her ears, it sounded like she was trying to convince herself. And if they are working together, why is Atkinson's car at the park? How did they get away? Lester doesn't have a car.
Like Margolis suggested last night, maybe he stole one.
She shook her head. It's just so confusing. This whole thing is like one of those Russian nesting dolls. Open up one doll, and there's another one inside, and on and on. And what am I supposed to do now? What if the detective finds something that implicates Atkinson? Am I supposed to get a 50C on Atkinson, too?
It might come to that.
And what if they can't find Atkinson either? Even his mother can't find him. What good would a 50C do if they can't serve it right away?
Colin didn't answer, but he sensed that Maria didn't need him to. Her thoughts continued to spin, words tumbling out.
God only knows where Lester is, but it's the same situation. What good can a 50C do if they can't find him either?
They will.
How?
Instead of answering, Colin reached for her hand. For now, I think our best bet is to stick with the plan, especially since there might be two of them.
Because you think it's easier for two people to follow me?
Yes. And because until we really know what's going on, keeping you safe is the only thing we can do. After dropping off Maria's car at her place, Colin and Maria drove to Independence Mall in the Camaro, taking a circuitous route that included side roads and sudden turns. Though neither of them saw anyone in the rearview mirrors, they took no chances. At the mall, they spent 40 minutes walking through different stores, holding hands and examining various things. They backtracked every now and then, studying the faces of those who'd been behind them. But Maria wasn't certain how much good it was actually doing. While she knew what Lester looked like, Atkinson was a mystery. Colin had logged into her computer with her password that morning and pulled up Pinterest, and she'd found herself scrutinizing Atkinson's missing persons photo, wondering how accurate it was. He had an unremarkable face, the kind that naturally blended into a crowd, and for all she knew, he could have changed his hair color, or grown a mustache, or shaved his head. Through it all, Margolis's theories continued to chase each other through her brain. Atkinson trying to frame Lester, Lester trying to frame Atkinson, Lester and Atkinson working together. Or was Lester working alone while Atkinson ran off with a girl? And in that case, was the car just a coincidence? Who knew? Every possibility, when followed logically, broke down somewhere along the way. Eventually, and according to plan, they made their way to a woman's apparel store. There, Maria pulled a few blouses from the racks, not really caring how they looked, but pretending to. Colin stood beside her and casually commented on the items. At noon exactly, she told Colin that she wanted to try the outfits on and walked toward the dressing rooms.
"I'll be out in a few minutes, Colin," she called out.
As soon as she entered the bank of changing rooms, Lily peeked out from one of the stalls. Maria scooted into the same stall, noting Lily's outfit. Red pumps, jeans, red blouse, and a carnation in her hair. In her hand were a pair of oversized sunglasses and a set of keys. On the floor was a navy blue tote and a department store bag.
"Oh, sugar, bless your heart," Lily said, reaching for her hands. "I know this is a terribly stressful situation for you, and I can't imagine how you're able to keep your wits about you, let alone remain as gorgeous as you were the first time I saw you. Why, if it was me, my skin would already be breaking out."
I doubt that, Maria thought. Lily was the kind of girl who'd probably never had a pimple in her life, but it was a sweet thing to say.
"Thank you,"
Maria said.
"And I know that I'm asking a lot." "You're doing no such thing," Lily said. "And I do not want to hear another word about it. I'm your friend, and this is what friends do for each other, especially in a situation as frightening as this."
"I didn't see Evan," Maria commented.
"He went to the food court a couple of minutes ago, probably eating something absolutely unhealthy. But considering he's been a sweetheart about all of this, I have vowed to say nothing at all to him about his dietary habits."
"Do you think it will work?"
"Of course it will work," Lily said. "People usually see what they expect to see. I learned that in my drama class. I had the most marvelous teacher, by the way, but we'll talk about that later. Let's get started, okay? Colin and Evan are watching the clock as we speak."
She handed Maria the tote bag along with the sunglasses and keys to her car.
"Your wig and outfit are in here," she said. "I'm sure what I got will fit perfectly. I suspect that we are the same size."
Not quite, but close enough, Maria thought.
"Where did you get the wig so quickly?"
"From a wig shop? Where else? And though they're not perfect, Such a thing would be impossible on such short notice. They'll both be more than adequate for our purposes.
Maria sorted through the tote bag. I can pay you back for all of this.
No, you most certainly will not. And though what I'm about to say will likely sound awful, all the cloak and dagger activity this morning has been a tiny bit exciting. It reminds me of the masquerade ball at my parents' country club. Now, let's get started. And don't forget the carnation. That's the kind of detail that people focus on. I'm going to text Evan. He'll be here in just a few minutes.
Maria left Lily's dressing room, slipping into the adjoining one. In the tote bag was an outfit that matched the one Lily had been wearing, along with a blonde wig and a red carnation. Maria put the outfit on along with the wig and spent a minute adjusting it to her liking. She tucked the carnation into the wig in approximately the same spot Lily had been wearing hers, then put on the sunglasses. Up close, she still looked nothing like Lily, but from a distance, maybe. She slid on the red pumps, and at exactly a 12:15, left the dressing room. Evan strode toward her.
Hey, Lily, he said as he approached. Did you find anything you liked?
In the corner, she saw Colin feigning interest in whatever was on his phone. Maria shook her head. Evan leaned in and kissed her on the cheek before reaching for her hand. They exited the store at a leisurely pace, then cut into a department store, making for the exit doors. Lily's car was two spaces in. Maria pressed the button on Lily's keychain, unlocking the doors, and got behind the wheel while Evan got in beside her. She checked her watch. In the apparel store, Maria knew that Lily would exit in 2 more minutes dressed as Maria had been, wearing a dark wig. Colin would take her hand and lead her to another store and dressing room, where Lily would change back into her original outfit. Lily would eventually exit the mall with Evan. Colin, meanwhile, would head to his car alone, as if Maria had never been at the mall at all. All of which was probably unnecessary, Maria thought. But the key word she knew was probably. With two people possibly following her, neither she nor Colin wanted to take any chances, and both of them wanted her someplace where no one would even think to look for her, someplace she'd never been before. Lily's house. Maria started the car and pulled out. No one exited the store behind her, nor did any other cars pull out. She circled the mall following Evan's directions and then pulled over as Evan hopped out at another entrance to the mall.
Thanks, she said.
Glad to do it, Evan said. And remember, you'll be absolutely safe. Lily and I will be there in a bit with your things, okay?
She nodded, still feeling on edge. Exiting the mall parking lot a minute later, she turned onto the main road. As she'd done way too frequently lately, she made a few random turns and continually glanced into her rearview mirror, feeling her nervousness finally begin to subside. No one could have possibly followed her. She was certain about it. Well, mostly certain. Lately, nothing had seemed certain at all. Lily's condo was less than a mile from Krabby Pete's, with private gated parking and living room windows that showcased a spectacular ocean view. It was tastefully decorated in whites, yellows, and blues, no surprise there, and felt both welcoming and comfortable. Maria spent a few minutes staring out over the beach without going outside and finally drew the shades before making her way to the couch. She stretched out with a sigh, thinking a short nap was just what she needed. At that moment, the phone that Colin had given her rang, and answering it, she recognized Margolis's voice on the other end.
A couple of things. I called my detective friend in Charlotte and left a message for him to see what he can scrounge up on Atkinson, either with his mom or at Atkinson's place. So that part is now in motion. More importantly, I also wanted to let you know the 50C was granted. I'm waiting for the paperwork now.
Thank you, she said,
leaving the obvious unspoken, that they still needed to find Lester to serve it, and maybe get a second one for Atkinson. When she hung up, she called Colin to tell him, then updated her parents as well. It took a few minutes to get her worried mother off the phone, and when she finally hung up, she realized again how worn out she felt. Like she'd been running nonstop for days, which, in a way, she realized, she had been. She closed her eyes again, but sleep didn't come right away. The call with Margolis, as short as it was, had triggered another round of questions. In the end, though, exhaustion eventually won out, and she felt herself finally, thankfully, drifting off. Chapter 27. Colin. After hanging up with Maria, Colin grabbed her bags from the car, slid in his earbuds, and got some music going while he brought her computer to the dining room table. There was something he wanted to check, and while he could have mentioned the idea to Maria or Margolis while they'd been having coffee, he decided against it. It was a long shot, but now that the 50C was in place, he figured there was no harm in checking it out. And whether or not Atkinson was involved was beside the point. Right now, finding Lester was a priority. It had come to him that morning. He'd kissed Maria goodbye, and on the way to his car, he tried to make sense of the facts at hand. That the court order would do no good unless they could find Lester. That time was of the essence. That Lester was dangerous. That he'd shown up with a gun and left Maria terrified. And, of course, that he'd taken her phone. Her phone. And with that, a memory clicked into place. A memory that took him back to the night he'd first met Maria. When it had been storming and he'd pulled over, she'd been skittish because of the way he'd looked after the fight, and she'd asked to borrow his phone because she'd misplaced hers. She'd been rambling a bit, but what had she said? He'd paused at his car, trying to remember.
I didn't lose it. It's either at the office or I left it at my parents', but I won't know for sure until I get to my MacBook. I use that Find My iPhone thing. I can track my phone because it's synced with the computer.
Which meant, of course, he could track the phone, too. It surprised him that Margolis hadn't thought of it. Or maybe Margolis had, and he'd already checked. And it had amounted to nothing because Lester had either discarded the phone or turned it off, or the battery had gone dead. Or maybe that constituted information Margolis wasn't allowed to share. At the same time, there'd been so much else going on, it wasn't completely out of the question that the idea had been temporarily overlooked. Colin didn't want to get his hopes up. The odds were slim that it would work and he knew it. But a couple of clicks of the cursor later, his heart hammered hard when he understood what he was seeing. The phone was still on and the battery had enough juice to let him know that it was located at a house on Robbins Lane in Shallotte, a small town southwest of Wilmington near Holden Beach. Shallotte was a good 45 minutes away, and Colin stared at the location, watching to see whether the phone was still on the move. It wasn't. The sight allowed him to track the phone's previous movements as well, and a couple of clicks later, he learned that the phone had been carried from the Sanchez home to the house on Robbins Lane without any detours. Interesting. Definitely interesting. But still not proof. Maybe Lester had known the phone could be tracked and he'd tossed it into someone's car or into the bed of a pickup as he was fleeing. Or maybe he'd dropped it and someone had happened to find it. Or maybe Lester was too delusional to even think along those lines. No way to know for sure, but worth checking out. He debated whether to call Margolis before thinking that it would probably be better to be certain before he did. Shallotte wasn't even in the same county, and he didn't want to waste Margolis' time if it would amount to nothing. He felt a tap on his shoulder and flinched automatically. When he turned, Evan was standing behind him. Colin pulled out the earbuds.
You're not planning to do what I think you are you? Evan asked. What are you doing here? I didn't hear you come in.
I knocked, but you didn't answer. Peeked in, saw you with Maria's computer, wondered if you were planning to do something stupid. Figured I would ask, just in case you were.
It wasn't stupid, I was tracking Maria's phone, he said.
I know, Evan said, motioning to the computer. I can see the screen.
When did you figure out to do that?
This morning, when I left Maria's parents' house.
Pretty slick, Evan said. Have you called Margolis yet?
No.
Why not?
Because you walked in, I haven't had the chance.
So call him now, Evan said.
When Colin didn't reach for his phone, Evan let out a breath.
That's what I meant when I wondered if you were planning to do something stupid. Because you weren't planning to call him, were you? You were going to check it out yourself before you call him.
It might not be Lester.
So? Let Margolis check it out. At the very least, Maria's phone is there and he'd get it back. And do I need to remind you again that this is police business?
You need to let Margolis do his job. You need to call him.
I will, when I know one way or the other.
You know what I think? Evan asked. You're lying.
I don't lie.
Maybe not to me, but right now I think you're lying to yourself. This has nothing to do with wasting Margolis's time. The truth is, I think you want to be front and center in this whole thing. I think you want to see Lester and put a face to a name. I think you're pissed off and you've gotten used to handling things your own way. And I think you want to be the hero, like taking pictures from the roof, or last night when you kicked through Maria's parents' door, even though the police were already there.
Colin admitted to himself that Evan might be right.
And? You're making a mistake.
If I find out it's Lester, I'll call Margolis.
And how are you going to do that? Are you going to knock on the door and ask if Lester's home? Sneak up and try to peek through the windows? Hope he comes out to wash his car. Slip a note under the door?
I'll figure it out when I get there.
Oh, that's a good plan, Evan snapped. Because when you wing things, it always turns out for the best, huh? Did you happen to remember that Lester has a gun? And that you might get sucked into some sort of situation you could have avoided? Or that you might make things even worse? And what if Lester spots you? He might sneak out the back, and then it'll be even harder to find him in the future.
Or maybe he's planning to run already, and I'll be able to follow him.
Evan put his hands on the back of Colin's chair. I'm not going to talk you out of this, am I?
No.
Then wait until I bring Lily home and I'll go with you.
No.
Why not?
Because there's no reason for you to come.
Evan let go of the chair, standing straight again.
Don't do it, he finally said. For your own good, call Margolis.
No doubt trying to emphasize the point, he reached for Maria's computer, and near the door he stuffed it back into her bag. He grabbed Maria's other things and left Colin's apartment, slamming the door behind him. Colin watched him go without a word. In the car, 15 minutes later, on his way to Shalot, Colin thought about the things Evan had said. Why was he going alone? Why hadn't he called Margolis? What did he hope to achieve? Because, as Evan had implied, the situation had become personal. He wanted to finally put a face to a name. He wanted to see with his own eyes what the guy was like. He wanted to watch Lester get served by Margolis and then, in the aftermath, find a way to keep an eye on him, even if he didn't tell Margolis about that either. It was time, he thought, for Lester to be looking over his shoulder instead of the other way around. If it even was Lester, of course. And yet, Evan had reminded Colin of the risks if the hunch turned out to be correct. Evan was good for things like that, and Colin knew he had to be careful. He was a single mistake away from heading to prison, and he promised himself that all he was going to do was watch. Even if Lester strolled by the car, he wasn't going to so much as touch him. And yet Colin still felt on edge, the adrenaline already beginning to flow. He forced himself to take long, steady breaths. He navigated through Wilmington, hitting one red light after another, and eventually reaching Highway 17. He had punched the Robbins Lane address into his phone, and he watched as the directions appeared. He followed the verbal commands, and at a little after 2 p.m, he was making the final turns through a quiet, blue-collar neighborhood that on the surface reminded him of the one where Maria's parents lived. But only on the surface. The homes were smaller and not as well kept. More than a few had overgrown lawns, and here and there he saw for rent signs, making the area feel transient. The kind of neighborhood where people kept to themselves and didn't stay long. Or wanted to hide? Maybe. He parked in front of a small bungalow 2 doors down from the address he was looking for, one of the rentals, behind an old station wagon that had seen better days. There was a small porch out front and he could see the door and one side of the house, where a window with curtains drawn faced a neighboring house. Peeking out from the far side of the house, he could see the nose of a blue car, but couldn't make out the type. Someone home? Had to be. Atkinson's car was at the park, or at least, according to Margolis, it had been a few hours ago. He wished he'd somehow been able to keep Maria's computer with him. It would have been helpful to make sure the phone was still there. He wondered whether he should call Evan and ask,
but Evan would use the opportunity to lecture him again, and he wasn't in the mood for that. Besides, more than likely, Evan and Lily were already headed to Lily's condo with Maria's things, which meant that all he could do was watch, with the hope that Lester would eventually venture outside. Then again, as Evan had reminded him, Colin still wasn't sure what Lester even looked like. Glancing at his phone, Colin saw it was coming up on 3 o'clock now. He'd been watching for an hour. There'd been no signs of movement beyond the curtains of the bungalow. No one had come outside. The blue car remained in place. On the plus side, none of the neighbors had seemed to notice him, and the street itself had been quiet. A couple of people had walked past his car. A few kids had run by kicking a soccer ball. The mailman had come by, and Colin had temporarily gotten his hopes up. He could, perhaps, catch the name of whoever lived in the house by checking the mailbox. But the mailman passed the house, making no deliveries at all. That was odd. He'd stopped at every other home on the block. It might mean nothing at all. Or it might mean that whoever was living at the house didn't generally receive mail, because their mail was sent elsewhere. It made him wonder. Time continued to tick by. 4 o'clock now, and Colin was getting antsy. He wrestled the urge to do something. He wondered again whether to call Margolis, wondered whether to risk a knock at the door. He trusted himself not to overreact, or mostly did, anyway. He stayed in the car, taking long, slow breaths, and was startled when his phone dinged. Evan. What are you doing? Colin texted back. Nothing. Another hour passed, 5 o'clock, with the sun beginning to sink lower, still bright, but predicting the gradual onset of dusk. Colin wondered when or if the lights would go on inside. Since he'd been there, it had become easier to imagine that no one was inside the bungalow at all. His phone dinged again. Evan. Again. I'll be there in a minute, the text read. I'm almost at your car. Colin furrowed his brow, then looked over his shoulder and saw Evan approaching from behind. Evan hopped in and closed the door, then rolled up the window. Colin did the same. I knew you'd be here. As soon as I left you, I knew exactly what you intended to do, and then you lie to me in your text about doing nothing? I wasn't lying. I'm not doing anything. You came here. You're watching the house. You're watching for Lester. That's something. Not if I haven't seen him. So, what's the plan now? I'm still working on it, Colin answered. How's Maria? She was asleep on the couch when we got there, but as soon as she woke up, Lily started talking to her about our wedding plans. I figured I might as well check on you since Lily can talk for hours on that subject. At that moment, Colin caught the flash of movement at the front of the bungalow, the door opening, a man beginning to step onto the porch holding a can of something. Get down! Colin hissed as he quickly lowered himself as well. And stay down! Evan automatically did as he was told. Why? Colin slowly poked his head up without answering, needing a closer look. The man had moved onto the porch, the front door open behind him. Colin peered closer, conjuring up Atkinson's image. Definitely not him, he decided, and he tried to remember what Maria had said about Lester's clothing last night. Faded red shirt and torn jeans? Yes, Colin thought. Same thing the man was wearing now. Lester? Had to be. And Colin felt another surge of adrenaline. Lester was at the bungalow, hadn't even changed his clothes. A few seconds later, Lester turned around and walked back inside, the front door closing behind him. Is it him? Evan whispered. Yeah, Colin said. It's him. And you'll call Margolis now, right? Like you said you would? Okay, Colin said. On the phone, after cursing Colin roundly for withholding information, Margolis snapped that he was on his way and would be there as soon as he could. No, he'd told them, do not follow Lester or anyone else for that matter if they leave the house. Let him handle it, Margolis demanded. And if Colin so much as got out of the car, he'd find a reason to put him in cuffs because he was sick and tired of Colin pretending he knew what the hell he was doing. There were a few more choice words as well, and when Colin disconnected the call, Evan looked over at him.
I warned you that he wasn't going to be happy, Evan commented.
Okay.
And you don't care.
Why should I?
Because he can make your life even more miserable.
Only if I do something that gets me in trouble.
Like interfering in police business?
I'm sitting in my car. I called him with information he needed. I'm not interfering. I'm a potential witness. He told me what to do, and I'll do it.
Evan shifted. Can I sit up again? I'm getting a cramp.
I don't know why you're still hunkered down in the first place.
40 minutes later, Margolis rolled up to Colin's car and pulled to a stop, his sedan idling in the road, the passenger window rolled down.
I thought I told you to get the hell out of here, Margolis said.
No, Colin said, you didn't. You told me not to get out of the car or follow him.
Are you purposely trying to be a smartass?
No,
because you sound like a smartass. I go out of my way to prevent you from getting arrested last night, and then you forget to mention this idea of yours this morning, so you can play Mr. Law Enforcement again.
Maria told you that Lester had taken her iPhone. They're easy to track. I figured that you'd probably looked into it already.
The expression on Margolis' face revealed that he'd overlooked the obvious. Recovering, he snapped.
Believe it or not, my world doesn't revolve around you and your girlfriend. I have other cases. Big cases. I was getting to it.
Sure you were, Colin thought.
Will you get Maria's phone?
If he has it. I have no proof that he does, other than your word.
As of a couple of hours ago, it was still there, Evan interjected. I checked before I came out here.
Margolis stared at Evan, his irritation evident, before finally shaking his head.
I'll get her phone, Margolis said. Now get going, both of you. I don't need you here and I don't want you here. I'll take care of it.
He rolled up the window, released the brake, and let the car drift forward before finally pulling to a stop directly in front of the bungalow. Colin watched as Margolis stepped out and took a moment to survey the place before finally rounding the car and heading up the walkway. As he climbed the steps to the porch, he turned toward Colin and jerked his thumb, reminding Colin it was time to go.
Fair enough, Colin thought.
The key was still in the ignition and he cranked it, only to hear silence, the engine completely dead. Not even a click. Colin tried again with the same result. Dead.
Let me guess, Evan said. Your car sucks.
Today, maybe.
Margolis isn't going to be happy.
There's nothing I can do.
He was talking to Evan while keeping his attention focused on Margolis, who'd yet to knock at the door. Instead, the detective was at the far end of the porch, peering at the car parked in the drive. When he turned, Colin thought he saw a look of confusion on Margolis' face as Margolis finally moved to the door. He hesitated before knocking. After a long pause, Margolis reached for the doorknob and turned it, cracking the door slightly.
Someone calling out, saying come in, and that the door was open?
Margolis spoke through the crack, then pulled out his badge as he pushed through the already open door, vanishing from sight.
Let's go to my car, Evan said. We can be gone by the time Margolis gets out. I know he hates you, but I don't want him to hate you any more than he already does. Or me, for that matter. He looks mean.
Colin said nothing. Instead, he was thinking about the expression he'd seen on Margolis' face right before he'd knocked at the door. Margolis had seen something. Something that didn't make sense, surprised him, something he hadn't expected. And why would Lester have invited him in if he was paranoid and afraid of the police?
Something's wrong, Colin said, the thought coming automatically even before he realized he'd said it.
Evan looked over at him. What are you talking about? He asked.
And in that instant, Colin heard the distinctive pop of gunfire, loud and explosive, two shots in quick succession. Colin was already reaching for the door when Margolis flew back out of the doorway, his jacket and shirt soaked in blood, his hand on his neck. He stumbled off the porch, falling backward onto the steps and sliding down onto the walkway. By then, Colin was already out of the car, operating on instinct, running toward Margolis, accelerating with every step,
watching Margolis as he writhed on the ground. Lester stepped onto the porch, screaming incoherently, holding a gun. He raised it, pointing it at Margolis. Lester's face held both fear and anger, his hand on the gun shaking. Lester screamed again and lowered the gun before raising it once more. Colin continued his sprint toward the bungalow, cutting across the neighbor's lawn, hurdling a small bush, closing in on the porch. On Lester. Zeroing in. A few more seconds. Lester continued to aim the gun at Margolis without pulling the trigger. His face was red, his eyes bloodshot. Out of control, screaming at Margolis, "It's not my fault, and I didn't do anything, and I'm not going back to jail, and I know what Maria is doing." Lester approached the porch steps, closing the gap between him and Margolis as he continued to aim the gun, his hand shaking, taunting. Lester, aware of a blur out of the corner of his eye, suddenly turned, swiveling the gun in Colin's direction. Too late. Colin launched himself over the porch railing, arms wide as he collided hard with Lester. The gun went flying, wheeling end over end and landing on the porch. Colin outweighed Lester by 40 pounds and he felt Lester's ribs crack as they hit the ground. Lester screamed in agony, momentarily paralyzed. Colin moved fast, shifting off Lester's body, his arm immediately wrapping around Lester's throat. Then he locked the arm down with the opposite hand. Lester began to thrash and squirm, neck sandwiched between Colin's biceps and forearm. Colin applied hard pressure to the carotid arteries in a classic chokehold as Lester tried frantically to escape. Within seconds, Lester's eyes began to roll back, going white, and all at once, he stopped moving. Colin kept applying the pressure, enough to keep Lester out for more than a few seconds. Then, scrambling to his feet, he rushed to Margolis. Margolis was still breathing but no longer moving, his face a chalky white, and Colin tried to figure out what he was seeing. He'd been shot twice, in the stomach and the neck, and was losing blood fast. Colin whipped off his shirt and tore it in half as Evan came running up, looking terrified.
"Holy crap, what do we do?"
"Call 911!" Colin shouted, trying to will his own sense of panic away, knowing that more than ever, he needed to think clearly.
"Get an ambulance, now!"
Colin knew nothing about gunshot wounds, but if Margolis kept losing blood, he had no chance at all. Because the neck wound looked worse, Colin started by applying pressure to Margolis' neck. Blood began to seep through the torn shirt immediately. He did the same for the stomach wound, where blood was still pulsing, forming a growing puddle beneath the detective. Margolis' face began to turn a sickly gray. He could hear Evan shouting into the phone that a cop had been shot, that they needed an ambulance, now.
"Hurry up, Evan!" Colin shouted. "I need your help!"
Evan disconnected the call, staring at Margolis as though he might pass out. From the corner of his eye, Colin saw Lester roll his head to the side, already waking.
"Grab the cuffs," he said. "Make sure Lester can't get away."
Evan, still staring at Margolis, seemed frozen in place. Colin could feel the blood continuing to soak through the remnants of his shirt. He could feel the warmth in his hand, his fingers red and slick.
"Evan!" Colin shouted. "Cuffs! On Margolis' belt! Now!"
Evan shook his head and began fumbling with the cuffs.
"And then get back here as fast as you can," Colin shouted. "I need your help!"
Evan hurried over to Lester and slapped one cuff on Lester's wrist, and then dragged Lester's body closer to the rail, slapping the other cuff around a post. Lester moaned, coming to as Evan rushed back. Evan fell to his knees near Margolis, his eyes wide.
"What do I do?"
"Take over the stomach wound where my hand is and press hard." Though the blood loss was definitely slowing, Margolis's breathing had grown shallower. Evan did as he was told, and Colin used both hands on the neck wound, and seconds later, Colin heard the first of the sirens, then a growing chorus of them. And while he willed them to get here faster, all he could think was, "Don't die on me. Whatever you do, don't die." On the porch, Lester moaned again, and his eyes finally blinked open, unfocused. A sheriff's deputy was the first to arrive, followed quickly by an officer from the Shallot Police Department, both coming to screeching halts in the middle of the street, lights flashing. Both men jumped out of their cars and rushed toward them, guns drawn, uncertain what to do.
"Detective Margolis has been shot," Colin shouted as they approached.
The guy cuffed to the railing was the one who shot him.
Both the deputy and the officer looked toward the porch, and Colin forced a steadiness in his tone.
The gun's still up there. We can't let these wounds go, and make sure the ambulance is coming. He's lost a lot of blood, and I'm not sure how much longer he can hold on.
The officer approached the porch while the deputy ran back to his car and shouted into the radio that an officer was down, demanding that the ambulance hurry. Both Colin and Evan kept their focus on the wounds. Evan had recovered enough for some color to have returned to his cheeks. Minutes later, the ambulance arrived and a couple of paramedics hopped out and grabbed the stretcher. More sheriff's deputies had arrived by then, along with additional police officers, the street out front now crowded with vehicles. When the paramedics finally took over for Colin and Evan, Margolis was looking even worse. He was non-responsive and barely breathing by the time he was placed on the stretcher. The paramedics were moving quickly. The stretcher was loaded into the back and one of the paramedics hopped behind the wheel while the other stayed with Margolis. By the time it was rolling forward, the ambulance had a police and sheriff escort, sirens blaring, and only then did the world start slowly coming back into focus. Colin could feel the shakiness in his limbs, the nerves beginning to subside. His hands and wrists were coated with the syrupy feel of drying blood. Evan's shirt looked as though it had been partially dipped in a vat of red dye. Evan wandered off, bent over, and vomited. One of the deputies went to his trunk, returning with a couple of plain white t-shirts, and handed one to Colin, the other to Evan. Even before Colin gave his statement, he was already reaching for his phone to call Maria and tell her what had happened. But as he spoke, all he could think about was Margolis. Over the next hour, as the sky dimmed and finally went black, an even larger crowd of police officers and sheriff's deputies had descended on the bungalow, as well as a detective from Wilmington and the county sheriff. Lester was delusional and argumentative, screaming gibberish and resisting arrest before finally being secured in the back of a squad car and sent on his way to jail. Colin offered a statement to the sheriff, a police officer from Shallot, and Detective Wright from Wilmington, all three asking questions at various times. Then Evan did the same. Both admitted that they had no idea what had happened once Margolis had entered the house, only that he hadn't been in there long before the gunfire sounded. Colin also told them that Lester could have finished off Margolis, but hadn't. Later, after he and Evan had been cleared to leave, Colin called Maria to tell her that he was heading home to change, but wanted Lily to drive her to the hospital so Maria could meet him there. As he was talking to her, he overheard a nearby officer tell Detective Wright and the sheriff that the house was otherwise empty, and that Lester appeared to have been living alone. After ending the call with Maria, Colin stared at the bungalow, wondering where Atkinson had been staying, and why again, if Lester was so paranoid, he'd let Margolis into the house in the first place. "You ready to go?" Evan asked, interrupting his thoughts. "I need to shower and change and just get the hell out of here." "Yeah," Colin said. "Okay. What do you want to do about your car?" Colin looked over at it. "Let's deal with it later. Right now, I don't have the energy to care." Evan must have seen something in his expression. "Are you sure that going to the hospital is such a good idea?" For Colin, it felt like less of a choice than a requirement. "I want to know if Margolis is going to be all right." Chapter 28. Maria. Since Colin's phone call, Maria's mind had been racing, trying to piece together everything that had happened. Colin tracking down Lester, Lester shooting Margolis, Lester aiming the gun at Colin, Colin taking Lester down, Colin and Evan trying to save the detective's life, Margolis being loaded into the ambulance, Lester resisting arrest, screaming that he knew what Maria had done. Lester. She'd known all along that it was Lester, that he was the one to worry about, and she kept reminding herself that he was behind bars now. This time, he hadn't vanished or simply run off. This time, they'd caught him, and he'd shot a cop, and there was no way he could get to her. "What about Atkinson?" a voice inside her asked. She didn't want to think about that. Still wasn't sure what to make of it, it still didn't seem to fit. Too much. What had just happened was overwhelming enough. The fact that Colin and Evan had been in the middle was nearly too much to process. Lily, Maria thought, was experiencing the same wild flow of emotions. Since they'd arrived at the hospital a few minutes earlier, she'd barely spoken and continually scanned the parking lot, watching for Evan's car. Maria had the sense that Lily needed to see and touch and hold her fiancé, as if to prove to herself that Evan was really and truly okay. And Colin. Of course he'd found Lester on his own. Of course he'd rushed toward Lester while the gun was pointed in his direction. Of course he'd taken Lester down without getting hurt in the process. And now, of course, Lester was locked away, and while she felt relief, there was anger in the feeling as well. Worry, too, for Margolis, and she had trouble understanding how Lester had gotten the better of him. She told Margolis that Lester was dangerous. She told him he had a gun, so why hadn't Margolis listened to her? Why hadn't he been more cautious? How could he have gotten shot? Maria didn't know, nor did Colin. When they had spoken earlier, Colin had said that he wasn't sure Margolis would survive the ride to the hospital. But Margolis must have survived, she thought. While she'd been waiting with Lily, half a dozen officers had entered the hospital and none had come out, which meant he was still alive, right? She was too afraid to ask. By the time Evan's car finally pulled into the lot, Maria could barely keep her thoughts straight. She followed Lily toward the car, and as soon as Colin stepped out, she put her arms around him and held him close. The four of them made their way into the hospital, got directions, and took the elevator to the second floor. They were directed down the corridor to the surgical waiting area, which was crowded with law enforcement personnel, as well as a few people who looked to be friends or family. Somber and grim faces momentarily turned their way. Evan stepped closer to Colin. "Maybe we shouldn't be here," he suggested. Colin's face showed nothing. "He wouldn't have been shot if I hadn't called him." "It's not your fault," Evan said.
"He's right, Colin," Lily added. "Lester did this, not you."
Despite their words, Maria knew that Colin was still trying to convince himself of the same thing, but couldn't quite bring himself to believe it.
"Fine," Evan said. "Do you see anyone we can ask about Margolis's condition? I don't see a nurse."
"Over there," Colin said, nodding toward a man in his 40s with cropped gray hair. The man saw them as well and headed their way.
"Who's that?" Maria whispered.
"Detective Wright," Colin said. "He was one of the people who took my statement earlier. Evans, too." When Wright approached, he offered his hand and both Colin and Evan shook it. "I didn't expect to see you here," Wright offered. "I had to know how he's doing," Colin said. "I just got here a few minutes ago, but so far, there haven't been any updates from the surgeon yet, other than that he's still hanging in there. As you know, he was in pretty bad shape when he arrived."
When Colin nodded, Wright motioned toward another area of the room.
"I know that you've been through a lot already," Wright went on. "But I was wondering if you'd stick around for a few minutes. Someone's been asking for you. She wants to talk to you."
"Who?" Colin asked.
"Pete's wife, Rachel."
Maria watched as Colin's expression went neutral.
"I'm not sure that's a good idea."
"Please," Wright said.
"It's clearly important to her."
It took Colin a moment to answer.
"Okay," he said.
Wright turned, heading toward the far side of the room, stopping when he reached an attractive brown-haired woman who was surrounded by half a dozen people. He nodded toward Colin and Evan. Rachel Margolis immediately excused herself from the group and started toward them. As she approached, it was clear to Maria that the woman had been crying. Her eyes were bloodshot, her mascara slightly smeared. She seemed to be barely holding it together. Wright made the introductions, and Rachel offered a brief smile that held nothing but sadness.
"Larry told me that you helped save my husband's life," Rachel said.
"I'm really sorry for what happened to him," Colin said.
"Me too," she said. "Thank you. And I,
she sniffed before dabbing at her eyes.
"I just wanted to offer my thanks to both of you for thinking clearly, not panicking,
calling the ambulance, putting pressure on the wounds. The paramedics told me that if you hadn't done what you did, Pete wouldn't have had a chance. If you hadn't been there.
She was on the verge of tears, the words so heartfelt that Maria felt a tightness in her throat.
Again, I...
She drew a ragged breath, trying to hold it together.
And I want you to know he's tough. So, he's going to be all right. One of the toughest ever.
He is, Colin agreed. But Maria had the sense that Rachel Margolis barely heard him, because she'd really been talking to herself. The evening rolled on. Maria sat beside Colin as they waited for news. Evan and Lily had gone to the cafeteria a few minutes earlier, and Maria listened as the conversations gradually gave way to murmurs of worry. People in the waiting room came and went. Colin remained quieter than usual. Every now and then, an officer or detective would come by to thank him and shake his hand. Though he was polite in his responses, Maria knew it made Colin uncomfortable because he still blamed himself for what had happened, even if no one else seemed to. And yet, the depth of his guilt surprised her. It had been clear all along that Colin and Margolis held nothing but disdain for each other. It was a paradox of sorts, and though she wanted to draw Colin out and get him to talk about his feelings, she knew he wanted to work through them alone. She finally leaned toward him.
Will you be all right if I step out to the hallway? I want to call my parents, Serena too. I'm sure they're wondering what's going on.
When Colin nodded, she kissed him on the cheek, then left the waiting area, heading down the corridor to a quieter spot where she had a modicum of privacy. On the phone, her parents sounded as worried as everyone in the waiting room and had dozens of questions. Toward the end, her mom said that she'd make dinner and asked that Maria come by the house with Colin, along with Evan and Lily. Her mom asked in a way that made it hard to say no, but that was okay. After all that had happened, she wanted to see her family too. Back in the waiting area, Colin was in the same spot where she'd left him. He still wasn't talking much, but as soon as she sat beside him, he reached for her hand, holding tight. Lily and Evan returned from the cafeteria, and soon after that, the surgeon finally entered. From where she was sitting, Maria watched as Rachel Margolis walked toward him, Detective Wright by her side. The room went quiet. Everyone worried, everyone needing to know, and it was impossible not to hear the doctor even from a distance. He survived the surgery, the doctor announced. But the damage was even more extensive than we expected. The procedure was also complicated by significant blood loss, and for a while it was touch and go. But right now, his vitals are stable. On the low side, but stable.
When can I see him? Rachel Margolis asked.
I want to keep an eye on him for another couple of hours, the surgeon hedged. If things keep on like I hope they will, I may be able to let you in for a few minutes later tonight.
And he's going to be okay, right?
That's the million-dollar question, Maria thought. The surgeon seemed to have expected it and continued in the same professional tone. As I said, he's stabilized for now, but you need to understand that your husband's still in critical condition. The next few hours are going to tell us quite a bit, and I'm hoping to give you a more definitive answer tomorrow. Rachel Margolis swallowed.
I just want to know what I should tell our boys when I go back home.
Boys? Maria thought. Margolis has children? The surgeon's voice softened. Tell them the truth, that their father survived surgery and that you'll know soon. He kept his focus on her. Please understand, Mrs. Margolis. There was severe trauma to the trachea and your husband is currently on a ventilator. Maria couldn't watch any longer as the surgeon began to go into the details of Margolis's injuries. Glancing away, she heard Colin's voice. Come on, he whispered, no doubt thinking the same thing she was. The details aren't our business. Let's let them have some privacy. Maria and Colin stood. Evan and Lily followed suit, and they left the room. When they were outside, Maria stopped and told all of them about the call with her parents and what they'd asked.
I know you're all probably exhausted and that you two were just in the cafeteria, but my mom made us dinner and...
Okay, Colin said. I still need to get back to my car tonight, but that can wait for a bit.
You don't need to explain, Evan tossed in. We get it.
Maria rode with Colin in Evan's car. Evan and Lily followed in Lily's car, and as they pulled to a stop in front of the family's house, Serena was waiting for them out front, along with her parents. As soon as Maria got out, Serena enveloped her in a hug.
Mom and Dad have been crazy worried about you all night, you know. Mom hasn't left the kitchen for hours, and Dad keeps checking the windows and doors. Are you holding up all right?
Barely, Maria admitted.
I'm thinking that you're going to need a seriously long vacation after this.
Despite everything, Maria laughed.
Probably.
After Serena, Maria hugged her parents, then introduced Evan and Lily. Surprising Maria, as well as her parents and Serena, Lily spoke Spanish, albeit with a southern accent. Because the front door was still boarded up, they went through the garage and into the kitchen before taking their seats at a table that was soon covered with dishes of food. As they ate, Maria told her family about their earlier meeting with Margolis, and Colin walked them through all that had happened after that. He paused every couple of sentences so Maria could translate for her mom. Evan added further details, especially when it came to the confrontation with Lester.
And Lester is still in jail, right? Felix asked when Colin had finished. And he won't get out.
Crazy or not, he shot a cop, Evan said. I'm not sure he's ever going to get out.
Felix nodded.
Good.
What about Atkinson? Serena broke in. You said he was working with Lester?
I don't know. It was something Margolis was looking into. Supposedly they knew each other, but even so, it just doesn't add up, Maria answered.
Then who slashed your tires? Serena pressed. Maybe Lester paid some kid to do it because he knew the hospital would give him an alibi. And the car at the park? Maybe Lester's borrowing it, Maria shrugged. I don't know. If Atkinson is out there, what are you going to do?
I don't know, Maria repeated, hearing the frustration in her tone. She knew there was still too many unanswered questions, even after all this, but
Lester was the one I was worried about, she said. He's the one who scared me, and whether he's working with Atkinson or not, the only thing I know for sure is that Lester can't get to me anymore, and
when Maria trailed off, Serena shook her head.
I'm sorry for asking so many questions, it's just that I'm still
worried,
Felix finished for her.
So am I, Maria thought, and Colin is too, but
her thoughts were interrupted by the muffled ringtone of Serena's phone. Serena pulled it out and sent the call to voicemail, her expression both hopeful and worried.
Who was it? Felix asked.
Charles Alexander,
Serena answered.
It's kind of late for him to call, isn't it? Felix asked. Maybe it's important.
I can try to reach him tomorrow.
No, go ahead and call him back now,
Maria said, thankful for the distraction, meaning it.
Like Dad said, it might be important.
She didn't want to think about Atkinson any more than she wanted to think about Lester. Nor did she have the energy to answer impossible questions right now. It was all she could do to process the last few hours. Serena hesitated for a second, wondering whether it was really okay before hitting the callback button. The table went quiet as she wandered to the kitchen with the phone at her ear.
Charles Alexander. Why have I heard that name before?
Colin whispered.
He's the director of the scholarship I told you about,
Maria whispered back.
What's going on?
Evan asked, and when Lily leaned close to hear, Maria filled them in briefly. Serena, meanwhile, had begun to nod, and when she finally turned, Maria could see her smile.
You're serious? Serena asked. I won?
Maria saw her mom suddenly reach for her dad's hand. Meanwhile, Serena was going on, no longer able to keep her voice down.
Of course, she said. That's no problem. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. Thank you so much.
When Serena ended the call, her parents were looking at their daughter expectantly.
I guess you heard what happened, huh?
Congratulations, Felix said, rising from the table. That's terrific.
Carmen rushed over, talking about how proud she was, and for the next few minutes, as hugs went all around, the anxiety over all that had happened was replaced by something wonderful. A feeling Maria never wanted to end. After dinner, Colin, Evan, and Lily said their goodbyes and went to fetch Colin's car.
Carmen and Felix were walking the dog around the block. Maria and Serena were in the kitchen doing the dishes.
"Are you nervous about the interview?"
Maria asked. Serena nodded as she dried a plate.
"A little. The reporter is supposed to be bringing a photographer with him. I hate getting my picture taken." "Are you kidding? You're the queen of selfies." "Selfies are different. They're for me or my friends. It's not like I'm putting selfies in the newspaper." "When's the story going to run?" "He thinks it'll be Monday," Serena answered. "That's when it will be officially announced." "Is there a banquet or presentation?" "I'm not sure," Serena said. "I forgot to ask. I got a little excited there."
Maria smiled as she rinsed a plate and handed it to Serena.
"When you do find out, let me know. I want to be there. I'm sure Mom and Dad will want to come too."
Serena stacked the dried plate with the others.
"Earlier, when I was asking those questions, I'm sorry for being so pushy about it. I wasn't thinking." "It's okay," Maria said. "I wish I had all the answers, but I don't. Are you going to stay here for a while? You know Mom and Dad want you to."
"Yeah, I know," she said.
"And yes, but I'll have to head to my place later to get some things." "I thought you were already packed, because you were going to stay at Lily's." "I was only planning to stay there for one night, so I'll need some more clothes. I also want to get my car." "Do you want me to drive you over now?" "No, that's okay. Colin will do it when he gets back." "When will that be?" "I don't know, 11:30 maybe, 11:45? "That's late. Aren't you tired?"
"Exhausted," Maria admitted.
"Then why don't I take you?"
Serena began, then stopped herself. She glanced at Maria.
"Oh, never mind. I get it."
"Get what?"
"I agree. You definitely need to have Colin drive you. Forget I even asked. That was dumb of me."
"What are you talking about?"
"Well, knowing that you'll be under the watchful eye of our hovering parents for the next few days, and knowing that Colin not only found Lester but took him down, and there's nothing sexy about that, and knowing you need to unwind from an incredibly stressful day, let's just say that I totally understand why you might want to spend a little time alone with him."
"I told you I just needed to grab some things."
"Anything in particular you want to grab?"
Maria laughed.
"Get your mind out of the gutter." "I'm sorry," she said. "I can't help it, but admit it. I'm right, aren't I?"
Maria didn't respond, but then again, she didn't have to. They both already knew the answer. Chapter 29. Colin. While Lily headed back to her place at the beach, Colin rode with Evan first to Walmart, a place that was always open and had everything he needed, and then to Shallote, where Evan parked behind the Camaro. Colin popped open the hood and began to loosen the battery clamps.
"Why do you think it's the battery? Your car's had trouble starting for a long time."
"I don't know what else it could be. I've changed out the ignition switch and the alternator."
"Shouldn't you have tried changing the battery first?"
"I did," Colin said. "I put a new one in a few months ago. Maybe it's a lemon."
"Just so you know, I'm not driving you back out here tomorrow if this doesn't work. I'm going to Lily's, and the two of us are going to spend all day tomorrow in bed. I want to see how well this whole me being a hero thing works out. I'm thinking she'll find me even more attractive than she already does."
Colin smiled as he loosened the clamps, then slid the old battery out and popped the new one in.
"I've been meaning to ask you something," Evan continued. "And remember, this is coming from someone who's seen you do a lot of dumb things. But today, I have no idea how you were able to even get to Lester in the first place. From the lawn, over the railings, going airborne like you did. And meanwhile, he's aiming the gun, and just so you know, it sort of makes me question your sanity. What on earth were you thinking?"
"I wasn't thinking."
"That's what I figured. That's just one of your many problems. You really should start thinking before you act. I told you beforehand not to go in the first place."
Colin looked up.
"Your point is?"
"My point is that despite your stupidity and possible insanity, I was actually kind of proud of you today. And not just because you ended up saving Margolis's life."
"Why?"
"Because you didn't kill Lester when you had the chance. You could have smashed him into pieces or choked the life out of him, but you didn't."
Colin finished tightening the clamps.
You're saying that you're proud of me because I didn't kill him?
That's exactly what I'm saying, Evan said. Especially since you probably could have gotten away with it. He'd shot a cop. He was armed and dangerous. I can't see anyone bringing you up on charges if you'd gotten a little too carried away. So my question to you is, why didn't you kill him?
Colin thought about it before finally shaking his head.
I don't know. Well, when you do know, let me know. For me, the answer's obvious, since I'd never kill anyone. It's not in my nature. I wouldn't be able to do it, but you're different. And if you're curious, I also have to tell you that I respect this version of Colin a whole lot more than I did the old one.
You've always respected me.
I've always liked you, but I've always been a little afraid of you, too, Evan said. There's a difference.
He pointed to the battery, wanting to drop the subject.
Ready to give it a whirl?
Colin rounded the car and climbed behind the wheel. He wasn't sure what to expect and was surprised when the Camaro fired up with the first turn of the key. At that moment, he found his eyes drawn to the bungalow, noting that half the yard was circled with police tape, as was the porch.
And there it is, Evan said. You know it'll probably break down on your way to Maria's, just to spite you. And try to stay out of trouble, okay? It seems to be following you around lately.
Colin didn't answer. Instead, he continued to stare at the bungalow, and it took him a few seconds to realize that something had changed since he'd left. Or rather, something was missing. It was possible, he thought, that the police had impounded it because it was evidence. Maybe there had been blood splatters, or maybe one of the shots had hit it, and the police needed the bullet for ballistics testing.
Are you listening to me? Evan asked.
No.
What are you staring at?
You know those questions that Serena was asking? Colin said, avoiding the question. The ones about whether Atkinson is part of this?
I remember. Why?
I think there's a strong possibility that he is.
Because his car was near the park, and Lester couldn't have slashed her tires?
Not just for those reasons. I'm thinking about the car I saw earlier, the one in the bungalow driveway.
Evan turned, then took a step backward, improving his angle. What car? He finally asked.
Exactly, Colin said, continuing to ponder it. It's gone.
Colin returned to the Sanchez place a few minutes before midnight. Maria was sitting with her parents in the living room, and Colin watched as she stood. She said something in Spanish to her mom, most likely that she'd be back soon, and walked with Colin out to the car.
Where's Serena?
She went to bed.
She's staying here too?
Just for tonight. My parents told me to tell you that you're welcome to stay too. Of course, since you'd have to sleep on the couch, I told them you'd probably rather go home.
You could join me.
It's tempting, she said, but...
No worries, he said.
When they reached his car, he opened the door for her.
What was wrong with your car, by the way?
She asked as she slid in.
The battery, he said.
So I was right, huh? I guess that means you should listen to me more often.
Okay.
As they were driving to her condo, Colin told her about the missing car.
Maybe the police took it.
Maybe.
Do you think Atkinson came back for it?
I don't know. I figure I'll call Detective Wright tomorrow. They may not tell me, but considering that I kept Margolis alive until the ambulance came, I hope they will. Either way, they should know.
She turned toward the window as they navigated the largely empty roads.
I still can't believe that Lester shot him.
If you were there, you'd believe it. He was out of control, like he snapped.
Do you think they'll get any answers from him?
Colin considered it.
Yes, once he's lucid again. I have no idea how long that will take, though.
I know he can't get to me, but...
Maria stopped short of saying Atkinson's name, but then again, she didn't have to. Colin wasn't taking any chances. He took a circuitous route back to Maria's condo, alert to any suspicious cars. Maria knew what he was doing and made no objection. It was just after midnight when they pulled into a space reserved for visitors at her condo complex. Colin stayed alert to any movement, but all was quiet as they climbed the steps to her door. There, however, Colin and Maria froze. They both saw in the same instant that the doorknob had been broken off,
and that the door stood partly ajar. Her place had been trashed. As Colin watched Maria wander around in a daze, crying nonstop and surveying the damage, his own outrage continued to grow. Couches, chairs, and pillows slashed open. The dining room table overturned. Dining room chairs tilted on broken legs, lamps shattered, photographs torn. The contents of the refrigerator splattered and smeared throughout the kitchen. Her things, her home, violated, shredded, ruined. In the bedroom, her mattress had been torn open, the bureau knocked over and drawers broken, another lamp shattered. Empty cans of red spray paint littered the floor, and virtually every piece of clothing in her closet had been marked by the paint. This, Colin thought, was what rage looked like. Whoever did this was as out of control as Lester, maybe more so, and the fury Colin felt was getting difficult to control. He wanted to hurt the guy, kill the guy. Beside him, Maria gasped, her sobs becoming even more hysterical, and Colin put his arms around her when he spotted the words that had been painted on the bedroom wall. "You will know how it feels." Colin called 911, then Detective Wright. He hadn't expected an answer, but Wright answered on the second ring. After Colin told him what had happened, Wright said he'd head right over, that he wanted to see the damage for himself. At Maria's request, Colin also called her parents, and while they insisted they would come over, Maria kept shaking her head. Colin understood. Here and now, Maria couldn't deal with their fears and worries, not on top of all this. She was barely holding it together as it was. He told her parents that she needed to talk to the police and let them know that he'd keep her safe. Two officers arrived within a few minutes and took Maria's statement, which wasn't much. There was more luck, though, with one of the neighbors who'd come out to see what was going on. Colin listened as the guy who lived next door said that he'd returned to his place only a couple of hours earlier and was certain that the door hadn't been ajar. He would have seen the lights. No, he said, he hadn't heard anything other than music, which he noted had been turned up loud. He'd considered coming over to ask that it be turned down, but it had stopped soon after that. After Maria had regained a semblance of composure, Wright reviewed her and the neighbor's statements with the officers. He then spoke with Maria and Colin. Maria had trouble keeping her thoughts straight. Colin rehashed most of what he'd told Wright earlier in Shalott, all the while fighting the urge to hit something. Colin wanted to find Atkinson even more than he'd wanted to find Lester. And he wanted to kill him. It was almost 2 a.m. when Wright said they could go, and he walked with them to Colin's car. Maria, Colin knew, wasn't in any shape to drive, and she didn't argue. When they reached the car, Wright held up his hand. He stared at Colin in much the same way Margolis did. "Hold on," he said. "I don't know why I didn't realize it earlier, but I finally figured out who you are," he said. "Who am I?" "You're the guy Pete thinks should be in prison. The guy who gets in all those fights, beats the crap out of people." "Not anymore." "Lester Manning might have a different opinion about that. Not that I give a crap what Lester Manning thinks."
"Do you know when the police will be done in there?" Maria asked. "And when I can get back in?"
"Aside from vandalism, it's not otherwise a crime scene," Wright answered. "But the forensics guys take their time. I guess that you won't be able to get back in until mid-morning tomorrow, at the earliest. I'll let you know for sure when you can, okay?"
Maria nodded. Colin wished there was something more he could do for her, but still.
"Do you know if they impounded the car that was in the bungalow?" he asked. "The one where Margolis was shot?"
Wright frowned.
"I have no idea. Why?"
Colin told him. Wright shrugged.
"Seems likely that they would impound it. I'll see what I can find out, though."
He turned toward Maria, then back to Colin.
"I know you're both exhausted, and I know you want to get out of here, but do you happen to know the name of the detective in Charlotte that Pete was working with?"
"No," Colin said. "He didn't mention his name."
"That's okay.
I'll do some digging. It won't be hard to find the answer. One last question. Where do you intend to go tonight?
To my parents, Maria answered. Why?
I figured, Wright said. That's why I wanted to ask. After something like this happens, people usually go to a friend's place or to their family. If you want my opinion, I'm not so sure that's a good idea.
Why not?
Because right now, I don't know what this guy Atkinson is capable of doing, and it makes me nervous. He's clearly got it out for you, and from what I saw inside, he's not only dangerous, but angry, and on the rampage. You might consider going someplace else tonight.
Like where?
How about somewhere like the Hilton? I know some people there, and I'm sure I can get you a room, along with police protection. Even if it's only for tonight. It's been quite a day, and both of you need to try to get some rest. I'm not saying anything will happen, but best to be cautious, you know?
Maria's voice was quiet. Margolis said that they weren't able to offer police protection.
I was talking about me. I'll watch your room tonight. I'm off the clock, so no big deal.
Why would you do that? Colin asked.
Wright turned toward Colin and said simply, Because you saved my friend's life.
Chapter 30. Maria. In the car, Maria called her parents with the news, then absently watched the detective's sedan out front as it led the way to the hotel, which was only a few blocks from her condo. Wright must have made the arrangements in the short time they were driving, because the key was waiting at the front desk. He rode with them in the elevator and walked with them to the end of the corridor, where a folding chair was already positioned just outside the door. He handed them the room key.
I'll be here as long as you are, so no worries.
It wasn't until she slipped into bed beside Colin that Maria realized how exhausted she was. A couple of hours earlier, she'd imagined making love, but she was too depleted for that, and Colin seemed to be feeling exactly the same way. Instead, she rested her arm on his shoulder, curling close and feeling his warmth until all at once, everything went black. When her eyes finally opened, sunlight was already streaming through the crack in the blinds. Rolling over, she noticed Colin wasn't beside her, and she saw him brushing his teeth in the bathroom. Glancing at the clock, she was surprised to see that it was almost 11. She sat up with a start, thinking her parents were probably going crazy. She reached for her phone and saw a text from Serena.
Colin called and said you were sleeping, and he told me what happened. Come to the house after you wake up. Dad's taking care of everything.
Maria furrowed her brow.
Colin?
She called out.
Hold on,
he mumbled, poking his head through the doorway, and she saw a mouthful of toothpaste along with some on his finger. He rinsed his mouth and stepped into the main part of the room, moving toward the bed.
Did you use your finger to brush your teeth?
He sat beside her.
I didn't bring a toothbrush.
You could have used mine.
Germs, he said with a wink. You slept late. I already called your parents.
I know. Serena texted. What's going on?
I'll let you be surprised.
I'm not sure I'm ready for any more surprises.
You'll like this one.
How long have you been up?
A couple of hours, but I didn't get out of bed until 20 minutes ago.
What were you doing?
Thinking.
There was no reason to ask about what. She already